All right, welcome to Speak for Yourself. I'm Jason Whitlock. That's Marcellus Wiley. That dude.
What's up?
Coming up, we'll tell you if the Seahawks or the Cowboys are the bigger threat in the NFC.
And if we're buying Mike Thomas' excuses about Sunday's loss to the Raiders. But we start every day with a Whitlock, so what you got today, big dog?
All right, shopping for a quarterback is a lot like shopping for a new or used car. Once the salesman or agent has you discussing what kind of payment you can afford, you're halfway down the road to making a colossal mistake. The Minnesota Vikings bought Kirk Cousins from a buy-here-pay-here lot called Priority Sports Entertainment. Mm. The salesman slash agent was Mike McCartney, the son of former Colorado head coach Bill McCartney. Mike is a great guy, a football man through and through. He helped the Vikings figure out that they could afford to pay Cousins $84 million fully guaranteed over the next 3 years. Of course, McCartney didn't tell the Vikings that Cousins is a four-cylinder quarterback lacking the necessary horsepower to drive a franchise. I'm sure the Vikings realize that now, after losing to Seattle 21-7 on Monday Night Football, falling to 6-6-1 on the season, and today firing their offensive coordinator. Kirk Cousins struggles to get up to speed against top competition. So far this year, he's led Minnesota to victories over the Eagles, 49ers, Cardinals, Jets, Lions, and Packers. Teams with a combined record of 26-51-1. Here's the list of teams Minnesota has lost to this season. Bills, Rams, Saints, Bears, Patriots, and Seahawks. Their combined record is 52-26. You see a pattern here?
Mm-hmm.
Let me show you another one. Here's a list of the top 10 highest paid quarterbacks this year in terms of average salary. Cousins is number three on the list. That's $266 million in NFL quarterbacks you're looking at. Their teams have a combined record this season of 57-71-2. The only guy on that list leading his division right now is Drew Brees. NFL agents have inflated the value of quarterbacks. They've convinced all of us that franchise quarterbacks run on 12 cylinders and can pull the whole franchise. No, they can't. The best ones run on 8 cylinders and can occasionally jump on the highway and win a game single-handedly. But day-to-day city driving requires the whole team. But you'd never know that if you watch sports talk shows like this one's. Agents have smartly fed sports media tastemakers information in exchange for the sports media justifying teams paying quarterbacks exaggerated salaries. The Packers are nothing without Aaron Rodgers. Nothing! Well, what are they with Aaron Rodgers at $33.5 million per year? The most obvious thing in football is you need a franchise quarterback like Tom Brady, a player self-aware enough to know the pieces around him matter more than an extra $5 to $10 million on his contract. How much more valuable post-career will Brady be than Aaron Rodgers? But I'm not blaming the cars. I'm blaming the shoppers. The quarterback madness needs to stop. When a quarterback hits the market or is up for restructuring, NFL executives let agents convince them it's Black Friday and you better be first in line to overpay for Kirk Cousins or Matt Ryan.
Mm-hmm.
The media promotes the insanity in exchange for their next scoop. Five of the eight teams leading their divisions are led by quarterbacks playing on their rookie deals. That's the magic formula. And the next step is persuading Patrick Mahomes or Deshaun Watson to accept a Tom Brady-like contract. If you paid off your car and it's reliable and not in need of an expensive overhaul, it's always smarter to keep it and ride it until the wheels fall off.
Mm.
All right, joining the desk now, former NFL stars Greg Jennings and Tony Gonzalez. Marcellus, I'll start with you. Did last night prove Kirk Cousins is overpaid and a lemon?
One of your better essays. I mean, maybe your best essay. That was amazing.
I can't wait to hear what you got to say about
it. I'm going back and forth on this subject.
Yeah,
I can't wait.
Exactly.
Especially from a guy who doesn't need, you don't even own a car.
I do own a car. I just don't drive it. Well, and it's been paid off for years.
Oh, okay. You know how that went then. I am torn on this one. I understand exactly what you're saying. You made valid points and it's correct. But I'm going to take you through the emotional play that every single one of the players in the NFL goes through on the day after a game. And this is why I think Kirk Cousins is having a great year despite the record. here you go. And he validates this $84 million contract.
Oh, my God. Go ahead.
You just went 18 minutes. So went long. I can't get 8 seconds. Here's the thing. We all sat there. You know when we get together after a win or loss, it's a team meeting, right? And we're all sitting there. And last night, they lost. So today's team meeting is not going to be pretty. Then we break down to offense and defense. And then you're sitting there and you're like, okay, what did we do offensively? 7 points, yuck. And then you get into individual meetings. And in individual meetings, this is when Kirk Cousins shines the most, because Kirk Cousins is doing his part to actually help this team win ball games. Don't use last night in an isolated vacuum and just say that's the $84 million contract. Kirk Cousins this year is having a career year. Highest completion percentage he's had ever, best touchdown to interception ratio, and is putting up numbers. However, it hasn't translated fully to team success. But in order to have team success, for us to be great, it starts with the individuals. Kirk Cousins is not a liability to this franchise. You can win football games with Kirk Cousins. You can go far with Kirk Cousins. And by the numbers this year, he's supporting why they gave him $84 million in validation. We'll see if that continues, and we'll see if others around him pick up the pieces.
Absolutely not.
Oh, really?
No. Uh-oh. No, I don't buy that at all.
Why not?
Because when you look at it, when you look at Kirk Cousins and what he has around him this year, he's been afforded more skill set guys around him this year than what he's ever really had in totality. And what I mean by that, I'm talking about receivers, running backs, tight ends, as well as a defense who's going to get you the ball back or stop the opposing offense to where you have an opportunity to continue to put your foot down on them, and they have not been able to do it in crucial games. It's 0-5 against teams with winning football records. Mm. Well, who's going to be in the playoffs? Teams with losing football records or winning football records?
Win it.
I need a quarterback that's going to make sure that we can beat those teams. Has he proven that he can do that?
No, he hasn't.
As much as I like Kirk Cousins and what he's able to do when it comes to statistics, when you look at last night's game, his statistics started to climb up when they had to throw the ball, when they were the game was over. And then those stats start to pad a little bit more. That's been Kirk Cousins over the course of this year. I have to fall back because I was wrong about my approach and what I thought the Redskins did as far as franchise tagging him 2 years in a row. They were right, and I didn't listen.
Can I push back just a little
time before
you
go? Sure.
You just used 2 years of body of work and then try to discard that because of one game. When you said that he's dressed up better than ever, he has the 30th ranked rushing attack. Despite the names in that run game and Dalvin Cook, and it looks pretty, it is not effective. Kirk Cousins is out of balance in terms of the pass to rush ratio. They're calling too many pass plays, and he's still doing a good job with that, but he has no support. That running game is one of the worst in the league. It's right by Arizona's running game.
Marcellus,
and that's why you
couldn't beat good teams in Washington, and he can't beat good teams in Minnesota.
Was he supposed
There's
to
a pattern here.
Was he supposed to?
He's supposed to
really?
Right now.
At some point.
Well, they're giving him that much money, you would think he'd be able to pull it out. But I think this is, just like you said, this is Kirk Cousins. Are you really surprised? If it's, I'm always big on the, you know, just like the stock market. You don't judge it by one season. You do it by over, like, 5 years. That's how you invest. At least that's what my financial advisor tells me. Mm-hmm. But looking at Kirk Cousins, is he worth the $84 million? I kind of look at it this way. Do you have a choice if you're an organization, if you're a franchise? Now look. You have to keep your fan base happy, okay? You have to keep your upper management happy. You have to keep the players happy, okay? The guys on your team are like, hey, what moves are we making to go get the Super Bowl? And so that forces teams' hand. Look at what Denver did. They got to pay a guy that they paid him a lot of money.
Case Keenum.
They paid him a lot of money. The Jags had to. Yep. Why would you sign Blake Bortles back? You know who he is. Well, we hit a little lightning last year. There's so few good players at that position. We can all agree on that.
Yeah,
maybe there's four or five guys out of the whole league. So how do you do that as an organization, especially when the market commands that much money, which I agree with you in that essay was great. These quarterbacks and these organizations, you need to be able to talk your quarterback into taking less money if you want to be competitive. Or it can be like Aaron Rodgers, give him that money, cross your fingers, nobody gets hurt. Because as soon as the starter goes down, the backups are rookies and guys that can't go out there and compete. And that's where Tom Brady is genius. That's why I say he is the greatest of all time. Not because of what he does on the field. It's because what he did off the field with his contracts, he takes less money.
Listen, Tony, I think you're right. But I also – and I love quarterbacks. And they are important. It's the most important position in sports. but it's overvalued and overpaid right now. If I'm the Minnesota Vikings or any other team, I'm just bringing in young quarterbacks through the draft virtually every year until I find me a guy that I can get away with for 3 or 4 years, like Russell Wilson, or what the Cowboys are doing with Dak Prescott, or Deshaun Watson now with the Texans, or Patrick Mahomes. And then I try to talk that guy into going the Brady route because it's best for the team. Quarterbacks over and for Matt Ryan's getting paid a fortune right now, and he is not a part of a winning scenario.
Look, I agree with that. And I think it was ironic watching the game and you see the Seattle Seahawks, who really are the poster child for exactly what you're talking about. Drafting a Russell Wilson in the third round and having him on that rookie deal, which allowed them to build a Legion of Boom and to nearly win 2 Super Bowls and be dynastic. Like, literally all that happens because you had a quarterback who was being underpaid, and that just allowed you to build assets around you. And look at last year, it even materialized in the playoffs. The NFL's Final Four, look at the quarterbacks. It was Case Keenum, Nick Foles, Tom Brady, and Blake Bortles.
Yep.
How in the hell does that come to reality if it's all about the quarterback position? So to your narrative of try to find the cheapest version but still make them good to great, that's the new NFL way. Seattle started that a few years
ago. Yeah, so, but if you're a player, I want to ask you this. Would you take less money if you're the quarterback? If you're Patrick Mahomes and you win MVP this year and you have good, successful seasons, when it comes up and they're saying you could sign for $40 million right now, but we want you to take 25 or whatever it is at that point, so the cap goes up. Would you take 25?
No.
No.
But again, y'all talking about the car. Yeah, I'm talking about the buyers. If I'm an owner, would I give it?
Would you offer
it? And if I look at all these stats and look what's going on in the league, I quit giving it.
Yes, and I agree with that, because when you look at what Blake Bortles and the Jacksonville Jaguars were able to do, and you look at even the Minnesota Vikings, they had it. The template to what the Denver Broncos did is so hard to do. They struck lightning in a bottle. They got Peyton Manning, a guy who they knew, smart. He's not going to do anything that's going to harm us. He can elevate us. We knew that. It was guaranteed. And it only lasted like that. Mm. Everybody else is trying to do that and recreate that template, and it doesn't work. When last year, you were further along with just an average guy at quarterback. Mm. So why not stay that course? Your defense is good enough. They're young. You're still going to be a great team in that division. Look at the Bears.
Yeah.
Like, come on. You don't need to dump this. You're paying the position instead of the player and the quality of that player and what he provides.
I agree.
The other thing, once you give them that much money, to me, you start calling plays to justify that. Mm. And you start, we need more passing yards. Mm-hmm. We're paying this guy all this money. It plays on that guy's ego. He's now the overwhelming star of the team, and everything has to be catered towards them. This is where I got to give Belichick and Brady, as Tony says virtually every day, you got to give them credit. They have some self-awareness, and Tom has executed a long-term plan that, again, this dude will be making so much more money post-career than Aaron Rodgers, who's even, or the availability to make more money. Mm-hmm. Who knows if he's greedy enough to go get it. But his brand is so strong from that winning and the way he's going to go out as the GOAT, there's a longer play to be made here for the quarterback. But again, I'm not even talking about the quarterbacks, because they're the cars. I'm talking about if I'm ownership. This is why I think Jerry Jones is another smart guy, and we kind of laugh at him about his love affair with Dak, but I think he's going to go in and put these numbers in front of Dak and say, you want to keep winning? We got to have a full team.
Or you can go, but then what about this? You say it's the cars, okay? So it's like a Bugatti, or let's go to real estate. Let's go to Beverly Hills. You live in Beverly Hills. The house in Beverly Hills is going to cost you between starting a nice house. It's going to start around $10 million for a house.
Yeah.
Just for a house, okay? Will you pay for it? Mm. You'd be like, well, because if you don't pay for it, somebody else is going to pay for it. You can say, you know what, forget it, man. I'm moving to Nebraska, and I'm going to get me a big old spread.
Issue, though,
you're not going to do that.
But the issue is, though, I don't have to live in Beverly Hills to win the Super Bowl. Mm-hmm. And so I can live in Carolina.
Studio City, baby. Yeah. I'm still winning out here.
It still splashes. It makes the splash. You're like, hey, where do you live at? Studio City, or you live in Beverly? Oh, you live in Beverly. Like, it makes noise. And I think that's the point I'm getting at when I said that before, that these teams have no choice. I mean, they're like, Okay, because there's so few of them, too. This is all of Beverly Hills real estate. Also, very few houses, too. So somebody's going to go. Someone is going to pay it. If not you, if Dak, if Jerry Jones goes to Dak and Dak says, well, forget that. I want my money. And Jerry now can say, all right, well, I'll see you later.
There's a
sucker team
out there that's going to give Dak.
Somebody's going to give it to him.
But there are smart people that you live in Studio City, right?
That's right. Represent.
Yeah, trust me. There are smart people that go out to your house because I've been and like, damn.
How much?
Yeah.
You hooked it up.
Yeah. And I'm looking at people in my neighborhood that ain't got near that, and they're paying a fortune.
Yeah.
Yes. And so I just, it's like you tease me about my car or whatever, but yeah, I got a 2007. It's been paid off since 2008.
There it is.
And I don't drive it anymore because I figured out there's a better way to skin the cat.
Yep.
Uber and walking.
You must be Ubering a lot, then.
Time for a big story with Lock and Wiley, joined by Tony Gonzalez and Greg Jennings. All right, let's return to Seattle, where the Seahawks dominated the Vikings last night, nearly shutting out Kirk Cousins and company while controlling the ball and rushing for over 200 yards. At 8-5, Seattle is comfortably in the 5 seed right now, but they're not the only team riding an old-school philosophy to the postseason, with an 8-5 Dallas relying on their defense and running game to claw their way to the top of the NFC East. All right, the question here is, which of these 8-5 teams is more dangerous in the postseason, the Cowboys or the Seahawks? To me, Seattle has the better quarterback and the better coach. But Dallas has the better personnel, and I'm going to bet on the overall personnel of Dallas's defense. Ezekiel Elliott at the running back position is better than the three-headed monster they have in Seattle. And then the way Amari Cooper has revealed himself, I don't think that Seattle has a number one receiver of that level. I think Dallas is more dangerous.
I think it's actually Seattle. You said it, the coaching, the quarterback position, but also their run game. It's actually a better run game. It's number one in our league, even though it's by committee. They don't have that one workhorse like Zeke, but by committee, they put up more yards and dictate the tempo even more so than Dallas Cowboys. I go there. But also, just get into a playoff mindset, and the game's on the line, and Dak has the ball, or Russell Wilson has the ball. I mean, like, hey, we're splitting hairs now. It's time to get gangster in this comparison. And I've always looked at the quarterback position three ways. Do we win in spite of you? Do we win with you? Or do we win because of you? I have never looked at the Dallas Cowboys and said, we're going to win because of Dak. We're going to win because of Russell Wilson. That breaks the tie, and I go with the Seattle Seahawks.
I'm with you, Jason. I go with the Dallas Cowboys because when I look at what the Dallas Cowboys have been able to do defensively, I'm not even going to talk about the offensive yet, but defensively, they can completely eliminate offenses and what they do best. Yeah. From the rush and to the pass. Like, that is who they are. That's an identity that they will hang behind. And you talk about Seattle running the ball. Well, Dallas stops the run. So they will do that. And then when you go to the offensive side of the ball, what I love about the Dallas Cowboys right now is, yeah, they understand that our quarterback may not be the reason why we win, but it's not just our quarterback that you're playing against now. You're playing against our run game, which is Ezekiel Elliott driven, and our pass game, which is surrounded around an elite guy who has exuded and put confidence in a young quarterback to where now he's a threat. And you have to worry about him being a dual threat, escapability and running the ball, as well as throwing the ball. I like where the Dallas Cowboys are trending.
Yeah, I'm going to go with Seattle, just to make it even, I guess. But I believe.
Way to earn that check, Tony.
No, but I believe it, though, because I think if you look at all things being equal, this team, they're kind of a mirror image of each other. I think that's probably why we have the question. But then I'm going to go with the emotional intelligence of Seattle and what they bring to the table, the history of what they've been able to do over these last 5-6 years from the Legion of Boom into the new defensive era that they have now. And Russell Wilson, that guy's chiseled, man. He's a winner. Mm-hmm. He's a flat-out winner.
Played poorly last night.
But for whatever reason, he always does so. He is the most out of NFL history that I've seen, especially in this day and age of quarterbacks putting up all these big numbers and all that stuff. He can do that, but he doesn't have to do that. He's in a league of his own. Kind of like Patrick Mahomes is creating this new look as a quarterback. I feel like Russell Wilson has done that. To me right now, if he does what he did the first half of his career to the second half, he's a Hall of Famer, first ballot Hall of Famer. And you look at his numbers, it's not like Hall of Fame numbers, but you watch that guy play, man, he is awesome. And that's why I like him.
And you saw that they put up that he's his best in December. So when we're talking about December, January football, Russell Wilson improves his own performance, which is already high standard. So this is a guy that when the lights are brightest and the stage is the biggest, this is when he shows up. With Dak, a lot of question marks still.
I'm on a play the other side because I'm kind of like Tony. I chose Dallas, but I can argue either side, and I'm going to argue the Seattle side a little bit. My issue with Dallas is Seattle's more committed to their style that fits their personnel. Dallas isn't as committed. They still want to make Dak Prescott the man. And if they would just commit to, no, this is Zeke, this is the defense, and then Dak Prescott, then I think they would be better. But when they had this dude throw the ball 54 times the other night, when they led pretty much from start to finish, they're trying too hard to make this guy a franchise quarterback.
I understand that. I don't think that they're trying to make him the man in Dak Prescott. I think what they're trying to do is showcase what we have now at the skill positions at wide receiver. You got a young Michael Gallup who he's trying to develop chemistry. We got to throw the ball because at the end of the day in the playoffs, we all know this, they're going to take away what you do best. And so Ezekiel Elliott running the football, although he's had a tremendous amount of success in the regular season, it is going to be a lot more challenging in the playoffs. And the same with Amari Cooper. He's leading the league since he's gotten to Dallas in receptions, or I shouldn't say in receiving yards and touchdowns, but that's going to be minimized in the playoffs. And other guys are going to have to step up. Why not allow your young quarterback to get these reps right now when you know you're going to lean heavily on what you do best in the playoffs?
Marcellus, here's second layer that I wanted to ask you, and we'll end on this conversation. You are into this new offensive style of football, the video game, blah, blah, blah.
Yes.
I'm sitting there going, man, these defensive teams, like a Dallas, like Seattle, like Baltimore, like the Houston Texans played, I think a defensive-led team can still win a title. What do you think?
Oh, they still can. I mean, if you look at last year's Super Bowl, we're talking about the two of the top five scoring defenses in New England and Philadelphia. However, that game was 41-33, so you still got to put up points even if you're going against a great defense. But I'm going to choose that the high-flying offenses this year will win the Super Bowl. And I give you this evidence, as I always do my homework in Studio City. You ready for this, Whitlock? Tell me which group you think is better. Okay, I'm gonna give you five teams from each group. Group A, Ravens, Cowboys, Bears, Titans, and Texans. Digest that. Group B, Chiefs, Saints, Rams, Steelers, Chargers. Stop it, it don't take that long. Group B, right? You know why Group B? Because that's the top five scoring offenses versus Group A, which was the top five scoring defenses. Hey, man.
I like that group better.
You damn
right.
But
I'm not convinced that the defensive group isn't going to produce the champion.
So the Ravens, Cowboys, Bears, Titans, Texans, you will bet that they will beat those top offenses?
You got to remember, I love the Texans. I like J.J. Watt, Clowney, those, and Deshaun Watson. So
you wouldn't bet that Kansas City house on that, would you?
No, but again, I've said I like the Texans are my favorites to win the Super Bowl, and I still stand on that.
Okay. I think the defensive teams have more than a chance. They, in my opinion, that's what typically ends up standing out in the playoffs. Yes, you have to score points. I'm an offensive guy. I understand that. But you got to be able to stop some teams, and when you stop teams, that puts added pressure on them to put that ball in the end zone, and things start to get unraveled.
Yeah, I think if you look at the top five, at least it was last week going into Sunday's game, I don't know what it is now, but the top five scoring offenses in the league are all divisional leaders.
Yeah.
Okay, so that just tells me right there. And then I think it was seven out of the eight are going to the playoffs right now, the top scoring offenses in the NFL right now. So right now it's still an offensive league, but there is a tide. The tide is a turning, okay? Mm-hmm. I'm looking at these games now, like last night and these games that happened this weekend and over the last 3 weeks. You're right. Some of those teams are surging. You got the Ravens. You got the Houston Texans. Defense is playing a role, and I think it's because the referees are starting to call these games differently than they did at the beginning of the season. It seems like there's less flags for being rough and tough. It seems like they're calling it more old school ways.
No question about that. In terms, you can hit a guy. Now, I'm watching quarterbacks getting fallen on top of. There was a flag early in the season that they're not calling now. But I also read a theory a couple of weeks ago that someone said in the new modern NFL, defenses don't really show up till November. Just because of the way that you practice and training camp, it's not as physical. It takes the defenses time to get revved up, and they really don't get here till November. And that's what I think we're seeing late in this season with the Bears beating the Rams, with Baltimore playing very well inside Arrowhead Stadium. Obviously, last night's game was a defensive debacle. But I just think defenses are more important at this time of the year. Cold weather, it's harder for the quarterbacks to throw.
Bingo, that cold weather. Because yes, it's indeed. Not so much how much better we are defensively, it's how you're starting to slow down offensively. Yep. It's a lot of skilled players that check their gauges pregame. And when everything's not optimal, they don't play optimal. They don't have the same rhythm and tempo. Guys are like, I can't feel my fingers. I played in Buffalo. Guys are like, I can't feel my fingers. Go out there, you didn't catch any passes. It's just kind of go hand in hand, especially later in the season.
All right, before we let you go, we want to congratulate our man Tony Gonzalez. He's going into the Chiefs Ring of Honor this Thursday night as the Chiefs and Chargers play in Kansas City at Arrowhead Stadium. I made my bones writing about Tony years ago. It's a well-deserved honor. Soon you'll be in the NFL Hall of Fame.
Yes.
But I'm sure this is just as important to you. Have they put you in the Ring of Honor in Atlanta yet?
No, not yet. Yeah. We'll see.
We love you more in Kansas City, Tony. Great career. Greg Jennings is back with us. Let's move to the Steelers, whose embarrassing loss to the hapless Raiders Sunday raised a lot of questions, especially after Mike Tomlin kept a banged-up Big Ben on the sidelines for most of the second half in a one-possession game. Today, Steelers insider Ed Bouchette reports that Tomlin kept Ben out because they were waiting for a painkiller to kick in, and Tomlin blamed it on an outdated X-ray machine while trying to make sense of the decision.
Because of the lack of information, we thought that the best thing to do, the most prudent thing to do, would to be only to make Ben available in an emergency-like situation was exactly what we did in Cincinnati several years ago because of lack of information. Obviously, he's got to be a willing participant in that. The doctors have got to get to a level of comfort, but acknowledging that level of comfort is including a lack of clarity in some instances because the X-ray was not clearly readable.
Can you clarify when you said after the game that you could have brought Ben back a few series earlier, but you said today that you're only going to use him in emergency situations? Is that saying he was cleared a few series earlier and you decided only to use him in emergency situations?
Again, guys, you know, we didn't have a lot of information, so dialogue was a part of the discussion. Really, guys, I've tried to be as transparent as I can be. I'm not going to get into any more of the minutia. I know you guys got a job to do. I wanted to be as completely transparent as I could. I was not interested in discussing it after the game because I'm not a comfort seeker. I don't want to blame others. I don't care about the equipment, the speed in which the thing transpired, whether or not we were able to read it. You know, that was the same equipment for both teams, et cetera, et cetera. So I said very little after the game. But obviously this thing has had legs and it has grown, and we want to minimize the senseless distractions. So I'm being very transparent with you in terms of what transpired, how, and why.
1,000% buy it. 1,000%. It makes perfect sense. I felt like listening to that, and Tomlin's key words to me was willing participant, Ben Roethlisberger. What he's saying there is like, Ben and I talked, and we all said we're not playing you unless it's an emergency, because the information's not good, the painkillers haven't kicked in, we don't want to put you in jeopardy unless we absolutely have to. Ben was on board with this. Ben's post-game comments, out of line.
Tomlin sold me, and I'm glad he brought that clarity. I think that it got legs because people were trying to write the story to fill in the blanks, because he left a lot of blanks out there, in part to protect the Oakland Raiders and their facilities, and also the NFL at large. Now, let's rewind time. When I was a San Diego Charger, we had to play the Oakland Raiders every single year up in Oakland, the worst stadium by far in the NFL. We would get on the field.
Bad food in the press box, too, Marcel.
They had the bad snacks. Dude, we get on the field, we're like, all right, we played on the whole baseball season, infield still, so that wasn't a problem.
But even the grass had them little, like, little ghetto nuggets. You know, them little brown things with the thorns on them, like Jesse Owens Park, like, nuggets. I was like, this is bad grass. Then you walk into the stadium. You know I'm talking about. You walking into your locker room, you have to duck. Literally duck. You might not. You're not 6 feet. Me, duck, just to get in the locker room. And then it's concrete ceilings. I was like, locker room looked like high school wood. And I'm like, this is the worst. They're trying to steal our spirit. When you tell me that the X-ray machine is not readable, duh, it's Oakland's Coliseum. It's the worst facility. So I think Tomlin jumped on some landmines, some grenades for the NFL.
Ben came back to bite.
Yeah, I buy his explanation. I just wish he would have said, I don't have enough information, and I'll get you that information when it comes to me. And then, Ben, this is the issue. It's not what Tomlin did or didn't say. It's what Ben Roethlisberger says, because it's not on brand or to you, like you say all the time, on script with what your head coach has now conveyed. And every team has the same protocol when it comes to press conferences. When your coach goes first, your PR team comes and lets you know and informs you on what coach has disclosed and what he has conveyed. Yeah. You then have the option to either go with that or to go against the grain. Mm. And that's what Ben Roethlisberger has proven to do year in and year out, which is why we always are sitting up here having these conversations about Ben and Tomlin.
Let's be clear. Ben, after the game, said he was basically waiting on Tomlin to put him back in. That was throwing Tomlin under the bus. I also want to be crystal clear, just because we're in today's society, you got three brothers up here defending Mike Tomlin. Anybody that's watched this show knows I don't defend Mike Tomlin all the time. I'm very critical of Mike Tomlin from time to time because I think he's immature and he does some things that I don't like. In this case here, and this has been my narrative for the past two or three weeks, Big Ben is a bad leader. Mm. And Big Ben had a chance to protect his coach, and he didn't do it after the game. Now today on his radio show, he's right on message with the coach. But Big Ben is a constant irritant. Big Ben is constantly trolling his head coach and anybody else, and Todd Haley, the offensive coordinator, whoever else he doesn't like. Big Ben tries to focus the attention on him and put a clown suit on everybody else. That's why Tomlin's up here having to re-explain this and go into great detail, because Ben threw him under the bus.
Hey, you're on to something. And we talked about this, but it was in short. But let's extend that conversation where Ben Roethlisberger is living in a false reality where we've seen some of the symptoms of a guy who may think everything is kosher around him, but in reality, not everybody is on Big Ben's page. A lot of people don't fool with Big Ben in real life, but they fool with him in football life because you need to make sure you take care of the big fish. But what's happening is...
Snakes on a plane.
What's starting to happen is, look, I told you before, look, Le'Veon and not even responding to Ben Roethlisberger reaching out. Antonio Brown felt a very certain way about him calling him out. But you got to, you know, Ben is still in the oxygen in the room. The only circumstance I could see like this is... And this is no shot at Kobe Bryant, but Kobe Bryant's last years, a lot of people were like, I don't want to say how I truly feel because I can't disrespect his greatness and how he is viewed in this organization. But in reality, a lot of people weren't clamoring to Kobe, and a lot of people are not on page with Roethlisberger. This is just the latest case.
I just want to just reiterate again. Yeah. Anybody that's followed my narrative for years, I'm a Big Ben fan. Been claiming him as my favorite player from the Mid-American Conference, wears number 7 like John Elway, plays like Elway. But at some point, you just got to deal with the reality of who Big Ben is. I defended the dude even when he was in his darkest days and being criticized. You can go resurface my tweets from back then. I defended the dude. The guy, I defended his right to have a second chance. Didn't defend him in those allegations. Big Ben fan. He's out of line. He's a drama king. Time to put on our thinking caps. All right, we're joined by Greg Jennings from Western Michigan.
Yes.
Iceberg Jim Jackson from Ohio State University. The Ohio State University.
The.
As you all know, I'm a journalist, and we've got our resident Ivy Leaguer here, Marcellus from the University of Columbia.
Columbia University.
Columbia University, I'm sorry.
South America?
My bad.
What?
We take a deeper look at some of the big issues in sports. You know, Columbia really don't belong in the Ivy League. Anyway.
Oh, don't do us.
We got a special cap for Marcellus here. Darnell, bring it in.
Oh, huh?
Yeah.
Ah, yes. Thank you very much. You look clean in that Warren Central.
Darnell, I mean, handling like this.
Yeah. Oh, he got
you. Man, what is that?
Oh, his ego. Oh, I got to deal with it every day. Y'all yeah. All right, let's move to an issue that flares up in sports, in the sports world from time to time. This week, we saw a couple of professional athletes getting into it with fans. In the NBA, the Clippers' Montrezl Harrell tried to go into the stands to deal with a fan who was heckling him. And in the NFL, Leonard Fournette got into it on the sidelines with a fan he claimed used a racial slur against him. Both of these incidents were caught on tape. Let's take a listen. All right, listen, as the only fan up here, just pure fan, I was never a professional athlete, and I was a fan that liked to heckle. I once cussed out Donnie Walsh from, like, the rafters of the Pacers Arena when I was an 18, 19-year-old kid. I just think the athletes have to realize you're getting paid millions of dollars. The people in the stands aren't. Why argue with or confront or engage with people who have a lot less to lose than you?
Well, that purchase of a ticket is not a license to ill. So, you know, you just still have to respect that my rights come at no price. Like, you can't buy away my rights, and it's still a workplace environment. We work here on the Fox lot. Tom Hanks may be next door. Can't run up on that lot. Can't run up on the set. Hey, Tom Hanks, you was up. Security, respect this environment. It's a workplace. A lot of people don't respect a court or a field as really a workplace environment. That's the beginning of this. Then you start to go into what really I think is at the core of this is that fans feel protected, as Stack says, Steven Jackson and Matt Barnes, that they could throw rocks and then try to hide their hands. And it's funny because they throw shots at these players. And on the court, on the field, all we hear is or boo. But in the stands, it's MF, it's this, your mama, that, or it's like, great job. I think that the NFL, NBA, the leagues need to start to come down with a heavy hand on these fans because we already seen the mouse of the palace. What's going to happen now is that these fans feel like they have that license to ill. I am a fan now. I go to every single Charger game. I go to a lot of Clippers game. I'm going to Clippers game tonight. I like to bring my son. He's 3 years old. I don't want to be sitting even in the section of someone who feels like they could disrespect the player that I'm paying, you're paying, our hard-earned money to watch them perform. If you can't do that with respect, then I think that you should be disciplined, whether it's the league or by these players.
I don't have an issue with players heckling the fans. I think
you don't have an issue with players heckling the fans.
I don't have an issue with players bouncing back and heckling the fans back. And here's why, because when we watch these videos, we're seeing it from the fans' point of view. If the leagues were to really wanted to get on top of this, start putting cameras in these tunnels. Start putting cameras on these sidelines aiming at the fans, because we don't see what is really transpiring from our point of view. All we see is the player looking bad in retaliation. And the fan, there's always a fan with a camera that's making that player look even worse. But that we hear the fan, but we don't see the actions. We don't see the image that goes along with it. We see the image, the body language of the player all the time. I think the leagues and as a whole need to get better at, you know what, let's protect our players, not only with the security, but let's put a camera in the stands as well to where we see what is transpiring from their side.
I look at it, too, from your perspective, too, being a fan now. When I go to a game, I hear everything that fans say about players on the court. I'm like, man, when I was playing, that was part of it. I remember a couple times I sent the guy, I said, listen, you really want to talk, I'm going to send you a pass. You can come to the back, okay? Because it got to that point. Now, it depends on where you're at. Montrezl is, what, 24? Fournette is 23. When you're young, you got the bravado. You don't think about them things. I think when you get older in the league, you kind of let things slide off your back a little bit more. But when you're younger, and people are yelling things out. You may be frustrated at the time. You want some get back. Yeah. You really do. But at the end of the day, Jason, like you said, it's not going to benefit you. I'm going to take it back to Vernon Maxwell. Back when he played for Houston, okay, his daughter was going through a health issue, okay? Fan in the stands in Portland was heckling him, said something about his daughter. Guess what he did? He ran up in the stands. Okay, the fan, okay, may have been wrong, but at the end of the day, it came back to hurt Vernon a lot more. We talked about Detroit.
Yeah.
So sometimes I would throw jabs back at people in the stands. Trust me, I would. I was young and I would do it because I felt I needed to defend myself. But as I got older, I'm like, you know what? It ain't even worth it. It's not worth it.
But it is worth it in terms of a respect issue. Mm. Let me tell you this. look, I'm not a fighter. You can say whatever to me.
I know.
You know me. I mean, you can say, Marcellus, you're amazing, or forget your mama. And I'm like, they landed in the same place because, right, you know what? For me to be insulted, first I got to respect your opinion. Mm-hmm. So I don't respect your opinion. So good or bad, it just landed nowhere for me. But thank you. I look at it like this. We get callous, we get desensitized as we play longer in the leagues and we become veterans.
Right.
But that's, what do we do as veterans? We always look back at the youngsters. How can we make it better for you, safer for you, respect? This is not a huge issue. Most games I go to, there's only select few who are just out of bounds. Right. But the leagues need to understand that is all it takes to spoil this entire moment. So start to bring more discipline to those who instigate moments that these players are responding to.
But again, we got to remember who we are. I think, are you over 40, Greg?
No.
No, okay, I'm
young
sorry.
Fella.
30,
young
fella. 35.
Young.
We're all adults here, over 35. There are young athletes out here, and all I'm talking about is giving them what advice that's in their best interest. Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's no win here for them. There's no win for Leonard Fournette in confronting that guy, the Harold guy. There's no win in it for them. When can we move to a place where we're giving the athletes the advice they need so they can stay winning versus because again, Leonard Fournette's job is to run the football.
Yeah.
So again, if I'm the coach or the owner, I'm like, hey man, you're not running the football. You're talking to our fans. I'm paying you millions of dollars to run the football during your work hours. I don't want you confronting a fan.
Whitlock, the problem with your advice is that it comes at a price which encourages fans to go even farther.
Yes.
That's the only thing. Look, I agree almost wholeheartedly.
You're not going to stop fans from yelling.
But you know what? They already took away, what was it, New England season tickets for the guy. Hey, I think if I'm in that section or if I'm a New England fan, I'll learn.
So you want more? You want
behavior.
More coverage like you talked about.
Yes, Greg,
from
yes.
The NFL, NBA, Major League Baseball, all of that in regards to curtailing and really coming down on fans that do it. And I'm with you on that because, again, when you're young, the bravado was there. Mm-hmm. You got to prove something. Hey, listen, man, you ain't going to talk to me like that, especially if something comes out racial like Leonard Fournette said. Now you get personal. But at the end of the day.
Make sure it's said.
Well, no, I don't know why he would lie about it.
I'm going to tell you why. Just as a journalist. I'm kidding. Everything I evaluate is through journalistic eyes. If I'm watching a guy if someone yells a racial slur at me, when I'm yelling back at them, I'm like, what the hell did you say? Blah, blah, blah. That's not what he's yelling. He's yelling something about, I'm going to come get me, or I'm going to come get you, or you come here. He's not focused on what allegedly was a racial slur. That it doesn't fly with me. That's always the excuse.
But how he responds, Jason, is different than everybody else. He's like, listen, I heard what you said. I'm going to come holler at you. I heard what you said. You keep talking like that, I'm going to come holler at you.
2 weeks ago, he's fighting with an opponent, and he got suspended by the NFL. His credibility is just not strong in terms of keeping his emotions in check.
That doesn't mean it wasn't said.
I understand, but that's my issue because we allegedly have to go off something when if we had a camera looking at the fan, the same as it is at these players, then we would know. And to your point, this is still a work environment for us.
I got
and so if
it. Do your
I,
job.
If I, if I am, I'm doing my job. But if somebody ran in here right now and started heckling us.
Would not move
right
me.
Now, you're saying it would not move you.
COVID, but none of these people out here are in control of my emotions.
What I'm saying is, you're 100% correct.
None of them. They can yell anything about me, anybody.
I'm with
not
you
in
there.
Control
like,
of my emotions.
But in New England,
and
he
we
threw
need
a beer.
To. We need, I get that, but this is about words. And as black people, if we can't at some point quit letting white people control our emotions. Because that's all this is. They throw a word and, oh, that's my justification for going crazy. I'm like, really?
No. I'm with you there.
There's I'm in control.
You're right, but they're in control as well. So, I mean, the one who is throwing
Let that person make an idiot out of himself.
But that's the problem.
You don't have to join them.
They're not making an idiot out of
themselves. Yes, they are.
No, because we don't talk about them. We talk about the player because that's who we see.
Again, that's not my point, though, because if you catch me anywhere, when I was 18, 19 and yelling at Donnie Walsh, I was making a fool out of myself. And people in the stands that were looking like, this dude. And so, again, regardless whether we talk about it on TV, the person yelling racial slurs, and trust me, he's clowning him or herself. And Leonard Fournette doesn't need to draw attention to that or participate in it and then become a fool himself. They're just not
in
control.
But that's a long game summation that he's making a fool of himself. In that moment, this is something that happens in our society.
He got suspended 2 weeks ago, Marcelo.
No, I'm not talking about Fournette. I'm talking about the fan. Think about it. Our entire society is getting divided based on what people like versus what people respect. And I see a lot of hecklers throwing respect out the window. Don't want to be respected, just want to win that moment. Just want everybody in the crowd to say, yeah, man, you threw the beer and didn't get in trouble.
Exactly.
You said this and then you made that athlete respond. Someone is filming him doing this. Now, the instigator needs to be penalized just like the responder does. And I get it. I've never had my buttons pushed in an athletic environment. I knew what I was walking into. I knew the fine print. But they threw batteries at me in Philadelphia. I've seen it. I've heard it. But we need to protect these guys because when we have the instances that go beyond the borders, we can't sit there and act like we didn't see this coming. These are moments that are giving you the understanding that this is bubbling and boiling over.
And everybody is not equipped to handle it the way we're talking about
equip.
We would.
We got to equip.
Well, but that's why when you're young, you kind of go through it and figure it out. Because I don't care what you say to a young player. If he got these kind of emotions, until he goes through it and something happens, he still go react. I can be a veteran all day long and say, bruh, you need to do this. This is how you need to handle yourself in this situation. But when that situation comes up and all this stuff is boiling up and he lets it out, until then, he can't get past that point, being young.
The point I tried to make, I think, last week, that I'll just say it again, we have a culture, but where we're so, did you disrespect me? Did you?
Yeah.
And first of all, and the point that you made is like, are you even qualified
to that's
disrespect me?
Right.
You're not even qualified. So I could care less. You can't disrespect me because you're not qualified. If your name is Joyce Whitlock or James Whitlock or Yolanda Johnson, the people close to Marcellus Wiley, you call me a name, you've disrespected me. We don't have some words.
Whitlock.
But just some rando?
Whitlock.
No dice.
Look, I give myself credit and I also give myself debit. I own a house on the high road, but I rent an apartment, boy, on that low one. You keep coming at me like that, hey. I don't give a damn who you are. I gotta go see that rental real quick. What's up, bro?
All right, welcome back. Whitlock and Wiley. Jim Jackson's back with us. Let's move to the NBA. When LeBron James and Dwayne Wade stepped onto the same court for the final time last night, LeBron's Lakers took home the win over Wade's Heat, and James switched to guard his good friend on the game's final possession. Afterward, both guys reflected on what their relationship has meant.
It's bittersweet, man. Every possession, you was just like, the next one is getting closer and closer to the last one. So a lot of emotions going on right now for me, just knowing I'm losing a brother in this game that I've had so many wars with.
And whether we was teammates, whether we was opponents, we brought the best out of each other. And I'm just thankful that I had the opportunity to be able to be drafted at the same time as this guy. And the friendship that we have, you guys know that's beyond basketball. But I'm going to miss this, you know? Like, I'm going to miss this, man.
All right, we don't have a lot of time here. We're going to circle back to this topic tomorrow because I actually have a lot to say on this. It was just too much to me. It's the game is about competition, not about your BFFs. And that's where we've gone too far in the NBA. Best friends, pregame videos. This dude's in Los Angeles with a pregame video. He never played here. And LeBron and them, it's a friends league, man.
Yeah. But the game was over. I'm torn on this one because I've
been. Did you see the end of the game? It was all rehearsed. It looked like an all-star game. LeBron's checking him. It looked like, remember, who was it? Isaiah that went out and checked Magic in the all-star game?
All-star game.
Yeah. That's what this looked like.
Oh, I will say this. The reason I'm torn is because I feel a lot what you're saying. Like, it's almost like they're trying to film shoe commercials in the moment. Like, okay, we need the right quotes, the right body language. And if I'm playing against one of my best friends, my best friend, and a foe, and it's our last game, this whole pausing and staring at each other, letting the cameras go and flick. Like, I'm lost in that moment, but they didn't look lost in that moment. They looked like they framed that moment. So I was a little torn, like, all right, get on with it. Show me that that's just your boy and not that this is going to turn into some campaign going forward.
But the NBA is all about promoting and marketing, and that's what it was. We're in early December. It's the Heat versus the Lakers. The Heat are not that good. You want to tune in. How do you do it? You promote Dwayne Wade, LeBron James. Good That's point. What it's all about.
Yeah. Can they compete at some point?
Oh, what? They competed. They competed. Now, again, one player's on a higher level than the other, so you can't say the two. Now, we go back to Magic and Isaiah, you know, the kiss on the cheek before the game. But after that, it was fierce competitors, okay? It was totally different. But we didn't have social media. We didn't have all the spotlight. So was it over the top? Yeah, it was over the top. But that's the current state of the NBA and sports in general. When you have all of this, you got to sell. That's where it's coming at.
I'm glad you got me to my Twitter off early with the anti-social segments. Jim, you're making my point. Everything's about social media. It's instead of competition, dude.
Well, he brought up Magic Johnson. That
this is all media. About social media with LeBron and D Wade.
Kevin Garnett, anything's possible. Like, and then LeBron runs when says, "Cleveland, this is for you." Like, this is one of those moments, but it happened pre social media.
This here is all social media.
I hear you.
But I think it was very genuine between the two, especially I think Dwayne Wade because
get a room.
Well, here's the thing, Dwayne. I think Dwayne. Come on, man. This is last go around. So people are showing Dwayne a lot of respect, I think, especially here with LeBron. Was it over the top? Yes. I give Dwayne this, though. This is where I give Dwayne a lot of credit. He teaches LeBron basically how to win. And he gave up himself in regards to being the guy to LeBron.
True.
So I get his emotions in regards to that. It was at the end of the game. It seemed like a love story. It is what it is, bro.
No, Jimmy, but this
but,
the word.
But we're in 2018. That's just what it is,
Jimmy,
today, man.
Jimmy, the Staples Center was open in 1999, right?
Uh-huh.
How does LeBron go say to Dwayne Wade at the end of the game, man, can you believe this? We sitting here at the Staples Center. All right, will you stop? Ain't nobody thinking about
come on,
damn
man, there's a lot of drama right now in the league. It's a lot. And I'm an old school dude, but I look at it. And it is what it is, bro. It's a showtime. You got to sell tickets.
What?
You got to market. That's what the NBA is all about.
To me, if they had kept it to post game.
100?
No, just the post game. Just compete during the game. And then afterwards, if you want to talk about how great it was, this guy is a competitor and a friend and the journey. And I get it. But they made it a part of the game. The ending looks scripted. The pregame ceremony for D Wade with the video and all. And he is an all-time.
Who put that together? I want to know who had the idea to here. And this is where we got to go back to the entertainment value. That had nothing to do with LeBron.
Yeah.
That has nothing to do with LeBron. That has something to do with the Lakers internal organization to say we're going to do this. For Dwayne Wade. Now, when Dr. J retired and Kareem, they gave him the chair. You know, I get that because I get it. But who put the video? Whose idea was it to say we're going to put this video
together? I guarantee it was LeBron.
Oh, come on, man.
I guarantee it was. This is a whole big promotion for Unfiltered. They got videos all going on Unfiltered. This is my thing. I'm a huge Dwayne Wade fan. Mm. Huge. The great competitor. I remember this dude carried them to a championship damn near by himself. One of the most incredible finals performances. Go out on that sword as a competitor. And then when the whistle blows, then it's about your friendship with LeBron. And I get it, because I respect the hell out of their friendship and relationship and what it signifies and means. They just went too far with it.
I got one more. I knew it was over when I saw Kobe on his farewell tour. And this is Kobe, you know, on just death stares right on the sidelines. On his farewell tour, all that Black Mamba went out the door. He was signing shoes in the third quarter, taking selfies. And I said,
would never do that before.
Never,
right?
never do that before. Yeah, that's when I knew it all broke right then.
All right, thank you, Jim. Time to get antisocial for real, but first I want to pay off my bet.
I can't hear you.
The Chiefs beat the Ravens. I'm a bottle short, though. Instead of six, you only get five.
What's that about?
The tax, because I was right about the game.
Can I determine if you were right about that?
I was right about the game.
I get six bottles? Oh, my dog. That's my dog.
All right, Darnell. What's popping on those Twitter streets?
Yeah, man. We're going to start off in the conspiracy theory league. Uh-oh. I mean, the NBA. We're in a recent podcast with Kim Bazemore and Vince Carter. Steph Curry said he doesn't believe that humans ever landed on the moon. Curry asked the guys if they believe that the U.S. landed on the moon. When everyone said no, Curry agreed, but said he didn't want to start conspiracies. Well, NASA got wind of Curry's doubts and invited him to tour the lunar lab at the Johnson Space Center in Houston. Is this theory really that far-fetched?
Listen, what I think is interesting here is, like, we love these athletes, and they're the leaders of our next generation. They're the smartest guys on the planet, even though they make $30 million at age 12.
For real.
Yeah.
For real.
So Steph Curry and Kyrie Irving, not the brightest.
That's what you took from this. I thought, what's the old cliche? Believe a half what you see and none of what you hear. And he wasn't there, so what the hell? Why can't I doubt it?
The moon and the earth is flat, huh?
We gonna flat argue earth, that. Dinosaurs? Hey, let's go there now. We got a lot of them out there. You know what's funny? Even if you doubt it.
I take that back about Steph Curry, too. I love him and his family.
Thank you.
I take that back.
Thank you. It's just, I laugh at the
I think
reaction.
Crazy things, too, so.
Thank you. So you're just scared. You can't tell the truth about how you really feel about these things. But just the reaction to me is just hilarious. So why not troll people if they're going to react like this? I don't have a problem with it.
All right, Darnell, what's next?
Yeah, moving on to the NFL, where yesterday the Raiders fired their GM, Reggie McKenzie. Coach Gruden claimed to have nothing to do with it, but Twitter wasn't buying that. Writer Tim Kawakami of The Athletic tweeted, John Gruden worked hard to say firing McKenzie wasn't his decision and that he didn't even know it was coming. But obviously, that's a bit of a misdirection. This team is Gruden's now, all Gruden. Should Raider Nation feel good about Gruden taking over the franchise?
No idea, but this reminds me of when I was in college. My roommate came from like a Huxtable-type family, and his mother used to send him cookies and all kinds of crazy stuff, and it come up missing, and I'd be, wasn't me? It had nothing to do with it.
I hear the evidence right here, lady. Look, Gruden didn't say fire him. Money talks, though. And that money, that $100 million said fire him real quick so I could get entire freedom and autonomy. So, yeah. Gruden, he's just doing a spin job right here. I ain't mad at you.
What's next?
Looking like you, Marcellus, had a busy weekend. You were named the Grand Marshal of the 65th Annual Holiday Parade in your hometown of Compton.
What's up, homie?
We know this is a huge honor for you. It looks like you and your family had a great time.
Yes.
What does this mean to you?
Wow. Seriously, it's just to grow up in Compton, and you never envision, never dream of actually coming back and being honored in such a prestigious way, Grand Marshal. Just made me think of my grandmother who just passed away a year or so ago. And she was the reason we moved to Compton to get a better life from Watts to Compton. And my mother moved from Compton to South Central to get a better life. Amazing journey there. But my grandmother, you know, rest in peace. I wish my grandmother was there to see that the city she moved to give her family a better platform in life. Her grandson was the Grand Marshal.
I got to keep it 100% real and authentic. Your Twitter feed is my favorite Twitter feed because stuff like this is always on it. Warmed my heart when I saw this. What a great accomplishment. Had to make you feel good. Made me proud.
My dog. Appreciate it.
What's next, Darnell?
Yeah, last but not least, yesterday on Lock It In, my guy Todd Furman was talking about the Chicago Bears, and sounds like he doesn't have high hopes for them in the playoffs. Take a listen.
This Bears team is good. They're a year ahead of schedule, but their ceiling is getting to the divisional playoffs if they win their opening round game. They're not going on the road and beating the Rams. They're not going on the road and beating the Saints.
Y'all agree with Todd here?
No, I don't. He said it so strongly, like as if they have no chance.
It's a guarantee.
I just watched the Bears take apart the Rams' offense. I know it was a cold weather game. Playing in L.A. or playing in that dome in New Orleans is a different story, but I can't believe it that strongly.
Yeah, he said it with his chest. If he would have just said it, you know, in a nasally way, maybe. But he said it too firm. But I would bet against the Bears traveling to L.A., traveling to New Orleans. I would bet against the Bears, but wouldn't be shocked
if the Bears pull off those upsets. But, yeah, I'm not thinking that they're going to go all the way. They're not a Super Bowl contending team this year.
I think what happened from that victory over the Rams is, like, Jared Goff had the worst game of the two quarterbacks.
Yes.
But people still believe in Jared Goff. I think that game made people be like, Trubisky, I don't trust him. I don't like Trubisky. And I think it's too early to jump ship on Trubisky.
Oh, yeah, he was coming back from injury.
Yeah.
In a cold weather night game, prime time. Like, a lot of variables, a lot of issues with him just coming back and hitting the ground running. So I wouldn't even go off on that. I still like him.
Uncle Jimmy's here to help us talk about our approval rating for Kirk Cousins.
Oh.
Do they still have milkmen? People deliver milk still?
Oh, believe me, I'm still making deliveries. Believe me. I got some receipts to show it, too.
Yeah. We don't hear about that, all right?
I'm just letting you know.
Visual. I don't even want that visual, man.
Let's get to the highlights from our discussion earlier today about Kirk Cousins. Shopping for a quarterback is a lot like shopping for a new or used car. Cousins is a four-cylinder quarterback lacking the necessary horsepower to drive a franchise.
Kirk Cousins is not a liability to this franchise. You can win football games with Kirk Cousins. You can go far with Kirk Cousins. And by the numbers this year, he's supporting why they gave him $84 million in validation. We'll see if that continues, and we'll see if others around him pick up the pieces.
Strong. All right, we had a very good conversation about quarterbacks being overvalued, Kirk Cousins being overvalued. And I made a great analogy, I felt like, to buying a new car, new or used car. But anyway, Jimmy, what's your take?
Great, of course, according to your own standards and analogy. But nephew, you know me. You know I drive a caddy. You know, I get it straight off the showroom floor. That's just the way I roll. Because it's the only life I know. You understand what I'm trying to say?
I
got it.
And I'm not going to ride nothing that got over 20,000 miles.
Nothing. Nothing.
Not unless it's a Kardashian. Kardashian keep that new car smell up to 20,000 miles. On selected makes and models.
Listen. We're not talking about the Kardashians. We're talking about NFL quarterbacks.
Yeah, car, not Kardashian.
Okay, so it's easy, greasy, so now you're going to get upset at me. Did I make the analogy of the car? You made the analogy of the car.
I did.
You did that.
Got a point.
Okay, so you know, I mean, you sitting up here, you know for a fact, I took your analogy as an assault. Your essay is an assault on my way of life. You know I keep a caddy. I get a caddy every year. You know that.
For what?
But this year, I'm getting me an Escalade.
All right.
My little Slimmy, she says she don't like the way when she got to squeeze into my CTS. Said it hurt her hips.
Your skinny got to squeeze?
She got to squeze into a CTS.
It hurt her, you know. Look, she didn't have that problem when I picked up at the bus stop.
Look, man, what's your take on Kirk Cousins?
Kirk is the homie. Kirk Cousins. I love Kirk. Huh? Kirk got paid.
Oh.
Props to Kirk and his agent.
Yeah.
He's a hustler. Yeah. He's a grinder. Yeah. He out to get that money like me. You know what I'm saying? He a paper chaser. You know, matter of fact, what's that song by William Devine? What's that song he got?
Who?
William Vaughn. What'd he say?
William Devine.
William Vaughn.
He said. William Devine.
William Devine. It's all say, big woman in the back, sun rooftop, digging in the scene with a gangster lean. Woo woo. That's all we talking about.
You William can't play Devine. That in the Escalade, dog. That's CTS music.
That's all.
That's El Dorado music, though.
Boy, give me a big woman in the back with a halter top, boy. It's all over. It's a wrap. Life gets no better for me than that.
All right, we got to talk about Kirk Cousins and our approval ratings on Kirk Cousins. Previously, I had Kirk Cousins at a 56. I now have him at a 52. His performance stays the same at a 14. He wasn't playing well last time we talked about him. All-time great. He got paid, so I'm going to give him four points on all-time greatness. Character stays the same. I drop him 4 points in terms of authenticity. You make that much money, you can't beat a good team.
Yeah.
Can't beat one good team. That's why I heard him on authenticity. Total of 52 for Kirk.
God, you mean on him. How is he not playing well, but he's having a career year by his numbers standards, at least. Can't do it
Marcellus,
all by himself.
You do know, you look at your job performance as a 12. That's lower than mine.
Yeah, that's true.
But my so overall, he's playing at an all-time great level, huh?
Yeah. I know who Kirk Cousins is. He's the first guy to get a fully guaranteed contract. And you know what? That makes you all-time great in my book. I look at it. Why is his character and authenticity so low for you? I don't get
you that like
part.
That? I don't.
Oh, you thought that was a little framed?
I think he's doing a little too much.
Well, he has a 16-year-old van, and the dude made $84 million. That shows you got some high character, no?
Trust me, yeah. He got something else on the slide. That's what you see on social media.
Ah, good guarantee point.
Guarantee
you
got
need
a
to get him a caddy. That's what the hell he needs. Now that's what he needs.
Showroom flow style to her.
Woo woo.